Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by this morning. You know, I woke up early this morning and I was listening to the news, and I was appalled to find out that, you remember a few months ago, we talked about the young girl, Rebecca Sedgwick, who resided here in Florida. And her friends, if that's what you want to call them, were bullying her, continually picking on her. She lived in Tampa. And she finally ended up jumping off of a concrete mixing building to her death. And when they questioned the two ringleaders, young girls that had not only bullied her in the school she was in, but when her mom moved her from the school, they continued bullying her, texting her online, texting her on her phone, doing bullying online, cyberbullying, if you will, and drove her to doing this. The pictures of her are really cute. She's a cute little girl. She looks, in some of these pictures where she's posing, she looks, I don't know, like a normal 12-year-old little girl. And so this morning, we talked about this on the show several times, and this morning when I got up, I heard on the news that the two girls, one of which, when questioned, posted on something, I'm not sure what, I don't remember anymore, about the fact that, yes, she knew she committed suicide and she didn't give an F, which gave you an insight a little bit to what kind of a young person this bullier was. So, and the parents, you know, are struggling. The grandmother was on the show, the morning show this morning, and it's heart-wrenching. So now all the charges have been dropped against both of these girls. I mean, they don't have to do anything. They're not in any trouble. And I have to wonder, why? I mean, I'm all for not ending their lives or doing anything, you know, too ridiculous, because, you know, one of my all-time favorite sayings is two wrongs don't make a right. But nonetheless, there should be some repercussions for this, I would think, some serious repercussions, because their relentlessness is a part of why this happened. So we're going to talk about this a little bit this morning. Before we talk about anything else, I'm going to bring Shelly in. Good morning, Shelly.
Good morning, Renee.
Isn't this awful? Did you hear what I just said? Were you on? Because I was on another page.
Yes, I agree it is awful. And that's one of the things that's wrong with our legal system. I was watching Judge Judy yesterday, and obviously, you know, it is one of the shows I like the most, because she's so, you know, she keeps control of her courtroom. She's so cut and dried with things. I mean, it's like she's very, very absolute about her judgment. She's never wishy-washy. But one of the things that she's frustrated about a lot is that there's a difference between morality and legality. And a lot of times what she can do for somebody from a legal standpoint is not what she wants to do, because from a moral standpoint, she believes that the decision should go the other way, but she doesn't have the legal ability to do it. And if she said that if laws were based on morality, her job would be much easier. And this is coming from somebody who has been in the judicial system for, 40 years or something, mm-hmm. make a comment. And any judge or lawyer that's really a decent person, you know, some of them aren't, many of them are, I would hope to say that most of them are, have the same frustration because our laws are not based on basic morality. And if they were, the books wouldn't be as big as they are, you know. You know, when you base something on simple morality, you don't have to have so many codices and so many different versions of, well, in this case, if they do it this way, you know. No, it's just basic morality. Is it right or is it wrong? You know, that there should be a penalty for treating somebody like that. You know, when I used to talk about the, when I used to give my lecture on the ancient Essenes, from a cultural standpoint, this is a group that lived thousands of years ago, and one of the things is that if they recognized they wronged somebody, it was their tenet that they had to go make amends. And if they didn't, it was left up to the community, and they didn't force anybody. They didn't ostracize people. They didn't punish people, but they would go to that person, in a community standpoint, and they would address it, and they would say, this isn't right. You can't treat someone like this. You know, it's not like these people never made mistakes, but when they did, they were called on the carpet immediately, and it was never allowed to fester into something that injured somebody. It was always addressed right away, and if the one-on-one people didn't address it, the community addressed it. And these people lived very, very happy and healthy lives.
Well, I don't understand myself. All of that stuff, it seems like every adult should grasp. Every person that's in a leadership role should understand, you know, all of that. But they don't. They really, really don't. And for me, again, it's even the boys that hurt Michael. It was never about how bad we could hurt them back. Never,
right.
ever. But it was always about what you do sets precedence for the days, the people, the situations to come. And that's what scares me. If you're not going to make the appropriate changes so that there are repercussions for actions, then we have a problem because there's lots of days that people wake up and it means nothing for them to hurt several people in their wake. Why? Because they're in a bad mood. I mean, believe that. Believe that there are people that get up in the morning and because they're in such a crappy mood, it's okay to be abusive to other people. And if you're a teenager and the gang mentality is involved in situations, there is no telling what can happen and no telling what the repercussions are going to be at the end of the day. So if these two girls and all their followers, nothing results in this, and I'm thinking along the lines of working someplace where they see what harm from others does to other people, a hospital scenario, a institution of some kind, being in a place, you know, one of the things that I was a part of at the Institute was a situation or a class called the Healing Circle. And even today, I can remember the looks on the faces, the tears that were shed in this room with often as many as 30 or 40 people over somebody's story. And if you've ever gone to an AA meeting for yourself or for anyone else to support somebody that you care about, the stories are awful. And so often they're stories that took place because of other people, because of other people's actions. So now you got, I think, the two girls in question. You know, when I heard this on the news this morning, I immediately came to my computer, and there is a posting that these girls, all the charges have been dropped against them, but no continuing story, which tells me that everything is very closed, that whatever took place in the last couple days, nobody's talking about it yet. To have it on this morning's news and not have it any place on Google, not even Huffington Post or any of those places or The Guardian or anything. Nobody's got that story yet. Tells me that this must have just taken place at the end of the day or something yesterday. But the fact of the matter still remains that this is not right. This is going to set precedents in the days to come, set back all the strides we've made towards doing something about bullying miles. It's going to set it back miles. What do you
think?
Well,
see, the things I don't understand is that all these social networks have code of conduct, have what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. What I don't understand, because I haven't heard it doesn't mean it hasn't happened. I don't understand why their accounts aren't being canceled. You shouldn't be going on. I mean, they tell you you have to sign an agreement that you're not going to go on there and use profane language, and you're not going to do this, and you're not going to do that. And yet all kids do. They say awful things on these social networks, and their accounts don't get canceled. But when something like this happens, bullying should not be, that should be part of the code of conduct or code of ethics or whatever the agreement is that they have to sign. And if they're caught tormenting another human being, they should, at very least, if there's no legal consequence, because there's no laws on the books preventing this because this technology is too new, all right, there should certainly be social networking consequences where they lose their ability to have an account if they're caught bullying somebody. You know, I'm wondering if anything is being done, even from a social networking standpoint.
That's a great question. And I mean, I'm on Facebook several times a day, either mobily on my phone or sitting at my computer. I have two or three friends right now that are struggling with cancer, and they're keeping updates on Facebook and pictures. And I have a lot of friends who have got businesses going. I have a niece who started a art, kind of a weekend and afternoon art school, and she has kids and adults in her art school, and they post pictures of some of the paintings and the jewelry and all these different things that she's made. I love keeping up with all of this stuff, and sometimes it's fun to just check it without having to bother somebody to say, well, you know, how's this going, or call somebody who's in a hospital. One of the women I've been keeping tabs on has been hospitalized for the last several weeks. She just went home last week, and every day there was a post from her in regard to what was going on with her. My point is that this is a nice thing. It's a beautiful thing if it's treated with the kind of respect that it deserves.
Right.
Now and then, I think I've complained a couple different times about some of the people that I know and love and I've known for many, many years who get into political arguments on Facebook. I don't appreciate that. I don't enjoy it. I don't think it's the place. I don't think it's the venue to bring up how you feel about Obama or where he was born or all of that kind of stuff. And that invokes a lot of anger and a lot of conversations that aren't worth my time. I don't care to hear private arguments between two people who have opinions or points of view. You know, opinions are like, you know, everything else. Everybody's got one. So, but on the same token, I understand kids, and I understand that if you have the opportunity to have the last word in a situation and no repercussions come from it, you're going to use that every time, every time. So something about this for me is like out of control, really, really out of control. So what do you think should happen to these two girls, Shell? Let's say we go back in time. Let's go back. 40 years, 50 years, for me, 50 years. And somebody writes something horrible in a letter and leaves it in my locker or leaves it on my desk in school. And it drives me to hurt myself. What would have been done all those years ago to that person? You got any idea what would have happened to that person?
No, I don't. Were there any repercussions back then? Are you asking me or you know the answer?
I'm just, it's for the sake, really, of discussion. I don't know.
I don't know that anything would have ever been done.
Do you ever remember any scenarios, anything like, I mean, change the what I said, you know, but somebody being bullied to the point where really horrible things were said. Not just, you know, like my Spike and Mike being called Spike and Mike look-alike. Why did Mom, why did you name us Spike and Mike? Everybody says Spike and Mike look-alike. Totally harmless. But being picked on, nonetheless. Or I remember a scenario, this boy, I was 14, he had severe acne, a kind of what people call today cystic acne.
Okay,
and I mean, there wasn't much out there for that. You went to a dermatologist and took medication and did topical things. You know, that was when Clearasil and all those things first started coming out. And somebody told him in school that he could remedy what was going on his poor face by shaving everything off of his face, all the tops to these horrible cystic acne. Well, they were worse than pimples. They almost looked like boils on his face, and then put alcohol on his face. So he went home and did that. And small neighborhood, South Florida, they picked him up in an ambulance. He almost died.
Oh, my God.
And because somebody said, you know, I don't know how you can come to school like that, ridiculed him first, and then told him that's what he should do, that that would make it go away because alcohol would kill anything. So there were no repercussions for that person. I don't know if the powers that be ever knew, to be all of us kids knew that's what happened, but I don't know if teachers and parents, especially his parents, ever knew that that's why he did something so ridiculous. I think they assumed that he did it on his own because he couldn't handle having all that on his face. So there were no repercussions for that. But I don't remember any other, as dangerous as that episode, any other thing like that that happened when I was a kid. And I certainly don't remember any of my preteen or tween teens or even early teenagers like 13 and 14, like what we hear today, ever taken their lives, ever. And, of course, we've talked about on the show 11-year-olds that have taken their lives.
Right.
So, but, again, this just set us back years in any kind of improvement that we've made by there not being any repercussions, because it's going to lighten the load of the teenagers that are out there that find this to be amusing, to do this to another child. It's going to make them think that the things that maybe they've been hesitant about doing for the last few months because of this episode are going to go back in full force, because that's the way kids think. Oh, we're not in trouble? Okay, well then, what do you want to do this time? I mean, it's just the way their minds work. But
well, see,
we
were talking about, you know, like sometimes behavior of children doesn't require punishment, but it requires some sort of reaction. When we talk about any kind of bullying, I'm not so sure that punishment a lot of times is the way to go unless you've harmed somebody. Now, in this particular case, the fact that the girl took her own life was precipitated by their mean comments, but at some point, you also have to understand that the mentality of allowing somebody's words to affect you that badly is also partly on the other person. You've got to be able to have a standpoint where you just don't, you know, where if somebody's criticizing you or saying nasty things about you, that you rise above it. There's a lot of people that get ridiculed all the time in the news. I mean, they're just dragged through the mud, and yet they persevere because they don't react to it. So it's a very, very tough subject because, you know, people can think whatever they want of you, and it shouldn't affect you. And if people had the appropriate self-esteem, it wouldn't. It seems like there's more people today with low self-esteem than ever before in history. Is that people just don't think well of themselves, and I'm not sure why that is. But I see more of it today than I've ever seen before. There's more insecure people. There's more people that are angry. But when you get down to it, they're angry with themselves, not with the world around them, and then they take it out on everybody because they develop, from their anger, actually with themselves, they develop this sense of entitlement towards other people. It's very odd, and it's something that's very prevalent in today's society. I think a lot of that comes from people not taking responsibility and always looking to blame other people for their lot in life. But the bottom line is that I'm thinking it's hard to make things illegal that have to do with somebody reacting to something bad you said. But the counterpoint to that is slander. Now, if you slander somebody and you hurt them in the pocketbook, you say something about a business that hurts that business, and now because of something you said, you damage their reputation, they can't bring in the business they were bringing in. Now, that's punishable in a lawsuit. That person will get a judgment against you. So why wouldn't this be considered some sort of slander? If you go on Facebook or some social network and you say awful things about somebody, that's just nasty comments that now make other people think bad things about that person that aren't true, and it causes that person emotional injury. So I'm making a parallel here. Why isn't that now punishable by some sort of a judgment, a money judgment? Those girls, at very least, should have had to pay money damages. I mean, in this particular case, it's too late for the girl to benefit from it, but it should go to the families then. They should be penalized somewhere, even if it's monetary, you know, for what is that called when it's not for physical damage, it's for emotional damage. Oh, punitive. There should be punitive damage judgments in these type of cases, where it's shown that what was put out was just simply malicious.
Well, I want to say that we had Izzy talked about that when we talked about the repercussions for the bullies themselves, what kind of punishment there should be if somebody is actually hurt. He said that there should be, because that's where everybody hurts the most, is when it attacks their pocketbook. And, of course, that's very true. And we see that all the time at fines or, like you just said, punitive damages and things like that speak volumes. But I'm more in line with a lesson. I'm more in line with saying to these two girls, okay, I want you to be a part of a suicide prevention group. I want you to hear the stories from some of these young people who have been abused, maybe not from other teenagers, maybe from the adults in their life, maybe from just one bad relationship, and they're in a suicide prevention program. They're in a rehab center where, I mean, we've talked at length about young girls who get bullied continually become cutters. And I think that there's a lot to be said about what you can learn by listening to somebody else's story of that kind of pain. So why not send these girls someplace like that? Why not let these girls work a few hours a day in a place like that? And I always get the return conversation that somebody with that kind of personality and behavior, are you sure you'd want them around people like that? And when somebody first said that to me, because you remember I wanted, do I still have you, Shelley? I thought I lost you. I remember when Mike first got hurt, my original thought was to take those boys and have them come to the burn unit at Jackson Memorial, because it is a, it's a, I don't want to use the words like horrific and things like that, because it's, something about it is miraculous as well and beautiful. But one of the treatments that they do to some of the people that are burnt real bad is they cover them with a charcoal, and it's all black. And if you've ever roasted a marshmallow and caught it on fire, that's what they look like. When the skin, when the charcoal starts to take the moisture out of the skin, so it repairs itself and it starts growing again, this black charcoal that they put all over them, is it looks just like that. It looks like a marshmallow that you caught fire. It gets all puffed up and black and flaky. But when they're done with that, then some of that new skin starts regenerating. It's an amazing thing. So I said, let's let these boys come and see what their actions have done. And so many people, including some of the physicians that I met and spent time talking to, and nurses, said, why would you want somebody with those kind of, that kind of energy in a place like this where we need everything to feel healing and like we're making a difference? And that made a valid point with me. I agreed with it. But on the same token, I can't let go of the fact that often if you don't understand the repercussions of your acts, there's no way for you to fix yourself. There's no way for you to change anything because you really don't get what you've done. And I think it's important to see what you've done. I think it's important to realize what you've done. And unless you see some of those other sides of that story, you really don't. So in my mind, these girls should, at the very least, have to give up their time and their energy and spend time with people who have been hurt like that. And maybe you'll save them. Maybe you won't. Maybe they're like some of the people we read about every day. Maybe they have some mysterious psychosis that makes them evil or makes them uncaring. I realize that there's people like that out there. I am not Mary Poppins. I can't float around with an umbrella. But I do choose to believe that in everybody there's some good. And but sometimes you gotta, you know, peel away to find it. And often the reason for that is, again, the relationships with other people, like what we talked about yesterday. The relationships that you have very early on often help form who you become by the time you're 12 and 13 years old, for sure. And
right.
It makes, if you can't deal with what's going on, like you just said, Shelley, those are true words. What the hell's the matter with everybody that they let somebody drive them to that point? I agree, but I also have seen people who are already so fragile that it doesn't take much to push them over the edge. It's like they walk their life because of other things, and maybe they were little things, because, you know, we're all different. And some of us have got amazing backbones and thick skin, and some of us don't.
So why is that, Rainey? Why are there more people today that are so easily destroyed by other people? I mean, you look through history and look at how resilient and strong civilization has been. I mean, we've risen up against so many injustices, all the things that happened to women and to blacks and to Jews and to the Irish people. I mean, you go back to history and you say, oh, my God, all these things. I mean, real travesties of justice, people being tortured, people being hurt physically, being incarcerated, people being put in mental institutions. And we've risen above all that, and now we're living in a world that is by far better than all that, because people do recognize injustice. People do recognize when you're being unkind to each other, and it's almost like people are more sensitive now. They're injured by little things more. You know, when you look at our past and what people resisted and stood up against and survived, and then you look today, and young people are killing themselves over words. And I'm not trying to belittle it, because I'm sure that it's one thing to hear that. But they're literally killing themselves over a nasty comment somebody's saying to them.
Well, I've thought about that before. I don't know that I've gotten as close to the truth as you just have, but I have, my mind has touched on, what the hell? I mean, why did that bother you? Or why are you taking that so personally? That other person, first of all, doesn't have the right to, to critique you to that degree. And it should make you laugh if somebody thinks they know you well enough to be able to say some of the things I hear people say to other people. However, I don't think I've ever pulled it apart the way you just did. And I do think you're right. I don't know. We come from a heritage of hard work. We didn't used to have electricity, for God's sakes.
Right.
We didn't used to have electricity. And look at us now. I'm sitting here in my office. I've got a fan up over my head. I have a light on there. I have the computer going. I'm talking on the phone. My cell phone is sitting beside me. Over on my bookshelf, I have a printer that I can take everything off the computer and put in hard copy. And I look and I think to myself, my grandfather and grandmother would think I'm on a science fiction show, you know.
or living in the lap of luxury, just because you have all these accommodations that everybody takes for granted in this day and age.
Exactly. But what it does more than anything else, what we've done more than anything else, is take away so much of the hard, hard labor. Maybe that's why. Maybe that is why. Maybe because life isn't more of a physical struggle, that we've made things so easy and so at touch of a finger away. Maybe that's one of the reasons, honey. Maybe because we lose some of our physical strength, and it affects our mental strength as well.
Well, think about it. The structure of the way life is now, and this may sound oversimplistic, but look at the change, all right? When I was growing up as a kid, most stores were not open on Sundays, okay?
Right.
It happened while I was a teenager, but when I was a small child, no places were open on Sunday. You couldn't go anywhere on Sunday. There were no 24-hour gas stations. All right, you didn't even pump your own gas. You would go to a gas station and somebody would pump it for you, because that was the first job I ever had. When I was like 8 years old, I pumped gas at my father's repair shop, you know, and that was a job I had. I mean, they were actually gas station attendants, you know. But back then, when every night the family would eat dinner, all right, because the family would all get together, you didn't have two people working jobs. This kind of evolved as I guess got into a teenager, that it became commonplace for both parents to have to work. Then places started opening up Sundays, so now you have people working 7 days a week. The family model started breaking down probably when I was young, all right, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. The more technological we've become, which should make our lives easier, this is the confusion for me. Technology is doing so much of what we used to have to do for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Do I still have you?
Yes, you do.
Okay, so technology is doing so much of what we have to do for ourselves, but the problem is that we have more time on our hands, but people are occupying it with other things that have nothing to do with family. So they're working longer hours, they're trying to create more money, and there's no family sitting down at the table talking about their days, finding out what their kids are going on. Everybody's running around. We have the ability to do more, but we do more to the detriment of family values and community values. So you don't even have the parents connecting with their own kids anymore, really understanding what they're going through. So the kids aren't being taught compassion and love and kindness. They're just like, how'd you do in school today? I don't think there's real conversations happening anymore on either side of the coin to either help the kids that have victim mentalities or to help the kids that have bully mentalities. I think for the most part, and I'm not admonishing these parents, I'm just saying it's kind of a symptom of the time, and once we recognize that, we can do something about it. But I think parents don't really know who their kids are today because I think a lot of that family dynamic doesn't exist anymore.
Well, I kind of agree with you. I think that in the gain of all of these amazing innovations, we've lost a lot. I agree with that. And I also agree with the fact that, like what I said, it has a lot to do with your own personal strength. One of the busiest or one of the best businesses today to get involved in is a gym, because people go in the morning before they go sit at a desk and go work out and lift weights. And I see all the time online and on Facebook a lot of my kids' friends who are working out, who that's what my teenagers want this year for Christmas, is weights and a bench, and they're very athletic. I love all that because going after you go to school all day and get hit with the frustrations of school and sometimes the inability to keep up with your studies because you have a struggle, they'll go and spend 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. First they played football, the two boys, and now every night they go to there's like four local parks that have lights all night, and they play basketball, and I mean nonstop basketball. And they come home, dinner, and do what homework they have to do, and they go to bed. I think we're trying to get back to using some of our physicalness, if that's a word, physicalness, to get our head straight. And I would go along with that. But if you, one of the things that I brought up the other day, we were talking about up north, and so many of the people that my husband grew up with, not me so much, because my early teenage years were in Miami, Florida, and I didn't know any farmers or people who worked their land or who grandma and grandpa and mom and dad and all the kids all lived together in a home, although I always felt comfortable with that atmosphere. It wasn't a part of my life. I still feel comfortable with that atmosphere, maybe a former life or something. But these people worked from dawn until dusk. There was no time for all the other crap because they shoveled plenty of it out of the barn. And then they cleaned fields and they fixed fences and they fed the livestock and they it was a full day from when the sun came up until the sun went down. Now there's lots of time on your hands. There's lots of time when all you can do is play a video game. And I'm not against video games. I think it was a great innovation, especially for somebody who doesn't have the ability to run outside and play basketball. I think we should have all of these things. I just think that everything that we have, we abuse. I think everything that was meant to be something that you did for an hour a day, if you like it, we're in a place now in the world where if we want to do it 6 hours a day, we can.
Right, and right. Very good point. Very good point.
That's really what's wrong. There is no regimentation of what you need to do. So now you've got people who are waking up and thinking to themselves, the strongest part of my body are my fingers because I do so much texting and playing video games. So now they're out there working out and trying to do other things so that they feel good about their body. So I feel like along with all the other things that we talk about on this show, we do need to go back to on the days, just as a side note, I tell everybody this all the time. I'm 65. I'm considerably overweight, but I'm pretty active. But on the days that I sit in here at my desk and research for the show or write emails or do writing, which I love to do, as most of you know, I read a lot of the things that I write on the air, and I am writing a book about my life, for what that's worth. Very therapeutic, by the way, for those of you who are thinking about doing it.
And very, very entertaining for whoever buys it.
But I, yesterday, got up very, very early in the morning, did the radio show, snatched up my little dog, Chewbacca. He gets a bath like every 5 days because he plays outside all the time and he gets ticks and fleas and all of the above. I don't use poison on him because I believe it kills our animals. So he gets a bath and I scrub him, I comb him, and then I cover him with tea tree oil to help keep everything off of him. It's a job. It takes me an hour and a half to bathe him. And then I dusted all my tables and everything, and then I vacuumed my whole house. I have a 4,000-foot square house. Then I mopped all the floors. I was done by 12 o'clock. And then I sit down and have a bite to eat with actually Spike and Spike were both here yesterday, and we all had some lunch. Then I finish doing what I have to do the rest of the day, and I always make a big dinner and things like that. I felt better yesterday than the day before when I kept myself immobile sitting at the computer, for what that's worth.
No, Betty, I totally agree with you. Agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I go through the same thing because, you know, with me working on my book, sometimes I'm literally sitting here for hours working at the computer, either researching or typing or whatever. And I notice that I start not feeling good. You remember when we worked at the Health Institute that we used to talk about sedentary lifestyles actually can create depression because when you exercise, even when you're cleaning your house, like the agenda you just ran through, when you're physically active, your brain releases hormones that create an uplifting of the mood. So even if you're doing something that's considered a chore, believe it or not, your body's releasing these hormones, and it makes your brain clearer, and it uplifts your moods. And that's probably why people that are more active, people that are in sports, tend to be a little bit more clear-thinking and easier to uplift their spirits than somebody who's sedentary, because a sedentary lifestyle almost leads you into depression because you never have these hormones released into the body. It's one of the reasons why I like the Wii video games so much. I mean, I don't have any, but I like the concept. I know people who own them. And here it is. It's a video game. You can do it in your house, even if it's raining out. And you can play all these sports, but you're up. You're standing up, and you're moving your body. It may not be as strenuous as the actual sport, but you're not just sitting there. You're standing up. You're moving. You're reacting to things on the screen, you know. So I love the video of the Wii video games for that reason, because at least they're getting some motion back to the physical body. You're not just sitting there and just, you know, like having the sedentary lifestyle, just, you know, using your fingertips. And but that's a huge benefit to not allowing blood pooling and oxygen poor blood being distributed around the body. Just standing up and moving your arms, believe it or not, oxygenates the blood. It's a great thing.
Well, and I think one of the other things that we did at the Institute that always got rave reviews, just for what it's worth, is there was a class out in the back of the property, in the woodsier part of the property, in a big canvas yurt. And there would be a class there in the morning at 7 o'clock where they did a little bit of yoga, a little bit of Tai Chi, and some meditation. And almost at every graduation, at the end of the week, Friday, people who, whatever their stay would be, if they were leaving, they would graduate on that Friday night. And of all the things that the guests would talk about, one of the things that I will say to you, of the top 10 things that changed their lives, hopefully forever for the better, was that morning continuum of meeting, meditating, a little bit of mild exercise, and learning how to stand, learning how to get your body in a place that it didn't fight you all day long, was the essence of it. You became one, your head became one with the rest of your body. And it made everybody's life, especially for a stay at an institute like that that takes away everything that you are comfortable with, your cup of coffee, your cinnamon toast, your banana and yogurt at 10 o'clock, and then your cheeseburger and french fries at lunch. You need things to help you get in the right place. And this particular class, I will say to you that of the thousands of people that I knew in 10 years that would come to the Institute to do the program, that was one of the most beneficial and yet non-evasive. You didn't give anything up. It was just simple. Just your head became reconnected to the rest of your body, which is, sounds like, you know, Rini, what the hell are you talking about? But if you think about it, off head isn't with the rest of your body. And pulling that together usually sets your day on a whole different place. And it wasn't vigorous exercise. Like I said, it was yoga, some yoga moves, some meditation, and a little bit of Tai Chi. An amazing, amazing thing. Do you remember how many people would comment about that, Shelley, at every graduation?
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, it's something that I have only sporadically taken advantage of over the last decade with everything that I've learned. But during the times that I have engaged in some, I never really got into yoga, although all of a sudden now I'm starting to learn more about it because I'm researching it for my book. But I had taken some martial arts, and I'm doing something now called the Mortar March. I'll talk about that on the show another time. It's very beneficial. And basically, it's just a way of balancing the body by certain yoga type movements. But anytime you do anything that physically balances your body, it has direct and powerful impact on your emotional and mental workings. So it's uplifting emotionally, and it brings about mental clarity. Very, very powerful combination. So you're absolutely right about that. And people that don't engage in some routine, you know, it doesn't have to be 2 hours. It could be a 5 or 10 minute routine before you go to work in the morning and before you go to bed at night. You know, something fairly easy to do. But when you move in these particular ways, Tai Chi is great. There's all different types of yoga, by the way. You can even Google yoga, and you can watch routines on YouTube. It doesn't even cost you anything, and then just mimic what you're watching. But I highly recommend, I completely agree with you on that. I think that it does bring you in sync, and the bottom line is our minds and bodies are integrally connected. It's something we talk about all the time. If you're not feeling good physically, it's going to affect your emotions and your thought processes. And if your emotions and your thought processes are off, it's going to affect your physical health. So by fixing one and enhancing one, you're automatically pulling the other with it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's worth the effort. If you're sitting out there listening in your
still in your bedclothes and with a cup of coffee in front of you and are wondering what you can do that will benefit you the most by giving the least, I would say to you that would be one of them. Pulling
right.
yourself together in the morning before you start your day. Because I've had back surgery, I don't do exercise in the morning. I'd like to lie to all of you and tell you I do, but I don't. But what I do is I stretch in the morning before I stand up, before I make these poor old fat legs carry the rest of my body. After I had my surgery, the doctor that did my surgery was an awesome man in Boca Raton, and he said, you have to start stretching. Before you fall asleep at night, it would be good, but definitely before you stand up in the morning. You should stretch your legs, your back, maybe do some exercises where you press the middle of your back against your bed, things like that, and just get everything so it's ready to endure what you're going to do to it the rest of the day. So I never stop doing that, and I believe that that helps me to a certain degree. I want to do a news flash here, though, because while we've been talking, I've been searching to find out if I could find the rest of these the rest of this story about the two girls that the charges were dropped for, and
all right.
It's finally up and going this morning, and it says Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd confirmed Wednesday evening that two of the girls that bullied Rebecca Sedgwick. That are now age 13 and 14 have had their charges of aggravated stalking dropped. And of course, Becca was 12. The whole story is about exactly what happened, and one of the lawyers who was the lawyer who helped, what's her name, the one that they believed killed her daughter,
Smith?
Yeah, what was her name? Anyway, he's one of their lawyers, and he said, it's not fair, you know, everybody's portraying them as these monsters, and they're just little girls, too, which, I don't argue with. I've said that, but I still think that that there needs to be some repercussions, and to just let them off the hook for behaving so badly, I don't think is.
But doesn't teach them anything.
Exactly. And again, you know, I'm a big believer in the precedents we set, and this is not going to set a good precedent. So it brought me to this other thing, though, that one of the kids told me about yesterday, and now I see it's online this morning. And there's a new game that teenagers are playing. Do you know anything about it, Shelley?
No.
About a new game that kids are doing to each other now?
No, what's this about?
It's called the Teen Knockout Game. And gangs of kids will be walking down the street, and they'll just randomly pick out somebody and cold cock them right in the face and knock them down.
Oh, my God. Well, that's like gang mentality.
Yeah, their victims can be anyone, elderly men or mothers with kids are not exempt. This poor attempt at manliness has even ended in death. Most of the knockout incidents have taken place in the New York metro area. New York-based CBS2 shed light on the fisticuff fad earlier this month with a report on the twisted game in Jersey City. You just knock them out. You hit them with a blow, and you take their belongings, one teen told the station. Another youngster said that people participate simply for the fun of it. But another said wannabe tough guys are interested in whether their friends actually have the strength to strike somebody down. Phoebe Conley of Vermont told an ABC affiliate that she was targeted while riding her bike in Columbia Heights, in a Columbia Heights section of Washington, D.C. My whole head went flying to the side. It was a hard punch. One kid came up from the side and pretty much cut me off. He threw a hook with his left and got me right in the face, and he said, wapow. This month, New York police have been investigating this, and a lot of people have made it about choosing and making it anti-Semitic crime, because they're picking on Jews in one Crown Heights, which I'm not familiar with. 46-year-old man was found dead with a broken neck and his head between two fence spikes in Hoboken, New Jersey. Some believe that he was a victim of this game. And a 72-year-old man in St. Louis died while walking. And this was way back in 2011. So this has been going on for a couple years, but now it's getting apparently bigger. And it's called the knockout game. And so I guess one of the other things that we need to say this morning is for people to start being aware of where they are and be careful. And I'm sorry that I have to say this, because it hurts my feelings to have to say that we have to be careful when we walk down the street. But we're down to just a couple minutes, and I have to share a very funny AJ story this morning that I hope will make all of you giggle. He and his Uncle Spike were the only ones home last night. Well, Grandpa and I were home, but Grandpa was out here watching some of his shows, and I was sitting in the living room with them, and I just cleaned up from dinner, and the boys are doing something with Uncle David this week, and Spikey was at school, and Crystal wasn't home from work yet, so it was the three of us sitting out there, and Diana was working, and Uncle Spike says to AJ, want to go for a bicycle ride? It was after 7 o'clock, so it was dark out, so he says, I won't be able to see, and Uncle Spike said, well, we'll stay right here, out here around our blocks, and, you know, I'll just be riding right beside you. My back hurts, and I know it'll loosen up my back. So he got all excited, comes to me and says, should I take a flashlight, Grandma? And I said, well, I don't know how you're going to hang on to a flashlight. You got reflectors. If a car comes, it'll reflect on the reflector on your bicycle. Just stay on the side of the road and be careful. You know how to do that. And Uncle Spike will be with you. So they took off bicycle riding, and they were gone about an hour. So when they came back, AJ, of course, was exhausted because he's 7 and pedals this little tiny bike. Uncle Spike does one stride to his 10, probably. And they got back, but you could tell that it was exhilarating for both of them, and they had a good time. But while they were riding, AJ said to Uncle Spike, what happens if, you know, if you fall off your bike or something? And Uncle Spike said, well, what would you do? And he said, I would ride home real quick and, you know, and get help. He says I would call 911. And Uncle Spike says, oh, really? Do you know the number? And he goes, yeah, 561-911. We all cracked up. I said, that's too funny. I said, but you don't need to put the 561 with it. It's just 911. 561. One, for those of you who aren't listening in Florida, is our area code for telephones. But so I think I've lost Shelley. She did really good this time. We only lost her a couple times, but I think we've lost her again.
No, I'm here. I'm here. I had muted it.
Oh, okay. Did you hear the story I just told?
That's hilarious. I love it.
561-911, and he'll get help for Uncle Spike. So, I know. You gotta love this little boy, don't you?
Yes.
Be when he's no longer this little boy, age of his life, I will miss this little boy. So everybody go out there and have a great day. Tomorrow is Friday, so we'll do a recap. I want to wish everybody a great Thursday and, you know, give it the best you got, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. And do a recap on this week's conversations and talk about relationships and money and parents and siblings. And we'll touch a little bit on the story that we talked about today about Rebecca. And next week, I think we're going to do some shows about child stars. There's a lot of stuff in the newspaper, online, and on TV lately about child stars, where they are, what they've done, and whether being a child bad for them. So everybody, God bless. We love you, and see you tomorrow. Bye, Shell.
Bye, Renee. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful day.